It is to Madrid that we head now, and our guest is staying up fairly late by most of our standards, and we're really grateful for it. He is one of Spain's most successful contemporary writers, Juan Gómez Jurado. 9 international bestsellers have been translated into 40 different languages, and his Red Queen series is being released in English. Black Wolf is the second in the series and is available in New Zealand bookstores now. Its protagonist is Antonia Scott, a woman of unsurpassed intellect who works behind the scenes solving crimes considered highly sensitive to the state. The Red Queen series has been so successful it's been taken to the screen by Amazon and can be seen on Prime Video here in New Zealand. Juan Gómez Jurado is with us from Madrid at the very late hour, post-midnight. Buenas noches, Juan. Thank you so much for this.
Good night. Thank you very much for having me.
And an early flight in the morning, too. So thank you. Could you introduce us, for those not familiar, to your protagonist, to Antonia Scott, and a little of the story in the second of this hugely popular series?
Well, that's a very nice question. First of all, please, I must apologize because of English is not my first language, so I'm going to try to do my best. Antonia Scott is a really special woman. She is the most intelligent person on Earth, and she has this kind of damnation, like a Greek curse, when you have an immense amount of power, but it comes with a great cost. Fortunately, for her and for us, she has by her side to John Gutierrez, who is a Basque cop. He's very huge. He's massive, and he tried to protect her as she's very fragile on the outside, not so much on the inside, because of she's really mission oriented and very very determined to catch the killer at all costs.
Fascinating. And how would you describe her mind? The supreme intelligence is an interesting conceit, is the word we would use in English, an interesting factor on which to base the character.
That's nice. To describe this is very difficult, actually. You know what happens, Catherine? I am not a woman, and I am not by any standard the most intelligent person in the world. So what I did is try to figure out a way in which someone who has such an amount capacity of taking inputs and processing them will be overflown as she is, because of sometimes there are so many information around her that she's incapable of dealing with that. Right, and that's something that in the TV show we try to deal in a visual way, because of for me when I was writing it was very very difficult, because of it's not so easy to describe how someone who is able to reach to such capable levels of intelligence thinks.
A very busy mind, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And interesting you mention the TV series, because writing thrillers, speaking to others, the pace is incredibly important. Your readers do not want to muck around, right? So pace has to be kept up. But at the same time, you've got here a very layered character, right? It's not just about plot by any means. And what is the challenge of that as a writer, to keep up that pace, that sense of the visual, and develop a really layered character?
Yeah, I think that your job and mine has a lot in common, actually, Catherine, because of whenever you're talking, whenever you are in front of your audience, you need to talk to them in a way in which you don't keep loose of the pace, but at the same time you try to be deep and profound and to tell something. And those two things are only dissimilar or antagonize each other just in appearance. You know, if you try to reveal things through description or dialogue, it's not the same as doing as in action. You know, for me, when I try to write, this is the most challenging It happens. It happens that I try to to deal those two things at the same time. And well, you know, the readers must know if I do well or not. I try to do that.
You talk about your process of writing, and it is hard work. And this is what we often don't appreciate. You think you've got a great story, job done. But for you, that process of showing, writing almost, I've seen someone describe it as cinematographically, rather than telling. That is just sheer hard work at the typewriter, Juan.
Yeah, it seems to me that whenever I have some kind of image inside my mind, the image is there. You know, I try to compare sometimes what Alfred Hitchcock said. Whenever he thought about a movie, it was clear inside his head, and then he thought about it like for months. And then at the very beginning of the process, it was the very uncomfortable and annoying process, and the last part of the process of shooting the actual film, so anyone else in the world could be able to watch what was inside his head. And it's kind of the same for me. Mm. I try to think in the books for a very long time and have a lot of images inside my head. I try to keep pictures and visual descriptions. I try to write them. But then when I need to write the actual book, then it comes the hard process, mm-hmm. because of everything is so clear inside me. But then you need to read that. You can't get inside my mind.
So the writing comes to you as visual rather than necessarily as words in the first instance.
Well, sometimes there are words that come first, a sentence that it's particularly powerful, that actually that happens too, but it comes visually first.
In terms of how you want a reader to connect with a character, you can like or dislike a protagonist. You can pity them, or you can connect and identify with them. With Antonia, we learn more of the not only the supreme intelligence, but all that she's gone through emotionally and all that's going on in her private life, including and very particularly in this particular book. Do you want your audience to connect with and empathize with this character?
Yes, but it's not always easy because of she's so out of this world because of how powerful her mind is, that sometimes she tends to keep the people in her life apart from her. That's why her husband is in a coma, because of she failed in her job. And then she tried to keep layers around her. Sorry, just to like to build an armor around her. And this is very difficult when you try to empathize with someone like this, because of you recognize that there's someone good behind that armor, beneath that all that layers of steel and sarcasm and all that. And then I have kind of a trick. I don't know if I should reveal this, but whenever I need to do that with Antonia, I try to humanize her companion, John Gutierrez, the inspector, because of his kind of the person that tried to humanize her and to try to get some kind of goodwill and the better part of her outside, because of everybody else needs to see that, right? Mm. And that's what I try.
And that's a key role for him. He's the classic disgraced cop who, you know, did the right thing but the wrong thing, or the other way around. And so he is actually an important part of revealing more of her. Can we talk about the other challenge, of course, of writing any crime writing, thriller crime writing, and particularly on the scale, because we're dealing with the mafia here, Spanish mafia here, and we're also dealing with this business of the hunter being hunted to some extent. How do you do your research into the criminal investigations and to get a really realistic setting for these books? Do you have good contacts? What's the method?
Yeah, I do have them, actually. It happens that Spain is a very, very beautiful and very quiet country. We don't have shootings overnight here. But at the same time, there are certain parts of the country in which mafia, especially in Costa del Sol, which is where the novel is based, there are very dangerous people there, especially Russian mob. And it happens that now and then there are certain dangerous dealings happening. And I happen to be friends with some people in the police here, and they try to tell me the stories that they live and how they try to deal with these dangerous people. And some of the stories that they told me, they were so amazing and incredible that I told them, I can't write this in a book because no one would ever believe me. And these are things that happens in real life. For example, whenever they found like 3 tons of cocaine in Nutella cans, do you know this almond chocolate cream, Nutella? It's very famous here. I don't know
Yes,
there.
yes.
I
We're
don't know, my
peanut
wife.
butter people here, but there are Nutella fans here.
My wife is a fan of both of them, and my dog is very fan of very fond of the peanut butter. Whenever you try to tell someone, oh, they came like a full container with Nutella, and inside the Nutella there were like 3 tons of cocaine, and you are not going to believe that unless you are going to watch it over the news. If I write something like this, it's kind of sign of sounds impossible, something like that. But it happens in real life.
Truth being stranger than fiction. Juan Gomez Jurado is our guest. We are talking about the second novel in his hugely popular Red Queen series. This one's called Black Wolf. It's on sale in New Zealand booksellers now. You're listening to 9 to Noon with Catherine Ryan on RNZ National. 19 minutes past 10 it is. Can we talk about the Red Queen series being published first in Spanish as Reina Roja? Forgive my pronunciation. When you read the English translation, how is that for a writer? That the translator's job is so important, is it not?
Yes, it is. It happened that Nick Castor, he's a very talented person, and he managed to get inside of my mind and my writing in a very particular way, because of the novel is told in a very special way for a thriller, because of every one of the leads in every scene, they have their own particular voice that it's carried by the third person narrator, you know. And then it happens that that I include like songs that are very famous in Spain that goes inside the mind or what the characters are thinking about. And I was really worried about that because of when I talked with the translator, I told him, no way in the world are you gonna be able to translate this, you know? And I happened to be able to read fluently in English. And when I read the translation, I said, oh my God, I don't know. I can't believe how you did that. I don't know. I think that the translators, they do have a special and very difficult job, and very special talent, as Nick Castor has.
The story of publication in the United States, it's available in English and in the US as it is here, published, I think, a month or two ago in the US. But what was the situation with getting it published in Spanish in the US? I don't know how many million, I think it's 40 million Spanish speakers in the United States. But what was the story with trying to get it published in Spanish there?
Yet it happens that I don't have any of the or all of the dealings about my translations and overseas and so on, because of I'm not trying to brag. There are many of them. I try to be focused on my writings, but I know that it was a kind of very nice because of the reception of the Spanish people in the United States has been amazing. There are, as you said, as many people living in the United States that speaks and reads Spanish as they are in actual Spain. So it's been like being home, actually. And whenever I go there, I feel very warm, welcome, and I am very, very thankful for that.
So effectively, did you do that yourself? Did you have it published yourself in Spanish via Amazon?
Well, I did that in the past. Now I am publishing myself through Penguin Books. Mm. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that word because of it's very difficult for us Spanish to pronounce penguin.
Absolutely
like that.
Correct.
Thank you. And then they are being very nice with me and they have helped me a lot. But I actually, as you said before, I started publishing myself via Amazon, and it was nice because of at the very beginning when you're starting your career, I was like 25 years old, and I was trying to find an audience and trying someone to reach with my books. And then I discovered that maybe there was something there. And I was one of the first authors in Spain to bet everything on the ebook. And then it came out well.
It certainly did. I guess I was specifically referencing making the Spanish language publication available in the United States. So sorry if I've misunderstood that. Because
it's half and half.
Yeah, it's very important to you, that connection with your audience. You have a massive following on X, something like 335,000 followers. And is that a chore or a pleasure for you as a writer?
Well, it happens. It's kind of pain and pleasure at the same time, because of whenever you feel that you need to say something, nowadays you need to think that two times or three times. And when every year that goes by, there's like something growing in my mind that whenever I need to say something, I need to open a manuscript and write a novel about that. Because of I don't think that reaction, it's kind of the best way to deal with everything that's going on in the world, because of we lack information all the time, and if we tend to react emotionally to things that we know close to nothing about. So that's why I think that whenever I think I need to say something about this, my wife comes or one of my sons comes and say, well, that, just wait a minute. And then I try to listen to them because of they are much more clever than me and they are always right.
So are you less, what's the word, are you more reluctant to use that social media platform than you might have been in the past?
Yeah, I am actually. Not because of I do think that there's some kind of self-censorship. It's not that the way it is. It's that whenever time goes by, and the more time goes by, the older I grow or become, I think that I am going less and less aware of what's really going on in the world, and less and less sure about my own believings, apart from believing in my family and trying to do my job the best way I can. But it's kind of fine. Less and less certain about everything. When my older friends say that this is a common thing and that it's happening to them as well. So I think that that's something that happens now.
It's about change, but this also is a time where we struggle to agree on basic facts. We may have our different views, our different perspectives, but right now we seem to be arguing over what is even fundamentally true. How does that feed into the writer's craft? Does it affect your approach to writing at all, or to your characters or to situations at all? Or in this genre, is there enough structure?
I think that you struck a nerve there, Catherine, because of this is the most important question that question myself every morning when I wake up and I have a blank page in front of me. And I try to think about that, about what is real, what is the truth in the world. And there's something very, very beautiful about fiction. It's whenever I write something in the page, that is going to be true. And whenever something happens to one of my characters, I mean, it's fiction, it's a lie by definition. But it happens to become true just because I wrote it, you know? And whenever I try to think about what is important for me, love, family, murder, which is very important, and it's very important in my books. I try to think about that in the sentences that I write, and then it becomes something, I hope.
Look, it's interesting, in the role of books at this time, we were talking about X and just how super shouty it's become, even compared to its predecessor. The thing with books is one must take time. You can't be constantly in your red rage phase when you're reading a book. You can't argue in person with the character. You have to sit with them if you're going to persevere with the book. Obviously, these books are coming to screen now, and that's fantastic. But is the writing thrillers, writing in novelistic form, writing and reading still your first passion?
Yes, it is. And I think that the word that you used before, it's the key of everything, not only in my life, but in everything that is going around us. You know, you use two words, actually, time and perseverance. And those two words are very, very important. Whenever you find someone who reads, who loves reading books, you know that someone who is perseverant and who has enough time to think about something and to invest some time into something that is going to have a consequence in their lives. I mean, this is the best well-kept secret of every writer. We only write 50% of the book. The other 50%, you are doing that at your own home or your armchair, whenever you are reading, and you are reading the words that we write, and then in your mind, with your experiences and your knowledge, you are writing the other 50%. That's why a TV show is never going to be able to have the capacity of your own imagination, because you are bringing something to the table that I don't. I don't know who you are. I don't know what have been your loves, your past dealings with sadness or death or sadness or loss. And that's what you are bringing to the table, right? And then that's why it's so important to read and to dedicate the time to and to persevere into something such as important as reading and writing.
Thank you, and thank you for your generosity being up this late when there's an early flight in the morning. I hope it's going somewhere exciting for fun, is it? Oh, I think we've lost one. Either that or he really doesn't want to tell me where he's going at 6 in the morning. We took him out. Your time is up. Juan Gomez Jurado. And the book is, the latest book is Black Wolf. It's the second in the Red Queen series and available in New Zealand bookshops now.